from the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast. This is Ag Day.
A new spin on a familiar factory.
This is the newest, most modern flour mill in the country today.
See what's new for wheat growers in the Midwest. What kills more people each year, wild pigs or sharks?
You're literally dealing with the great survivalist creature that's also an omnivore.
As the nation's trade chief gets grilled by lawmakers.
You have failed to enforce the Phase One agreement, despite knowing that China is violating its end of the agreement.
What she had to say about China and opening new ag trade avenues right now on Ag Day.
Ag Day, presented by Pioneer. What's next happens when the name on the cap matches the power of one's purpose. Pioneer, what's next happens here.
Good morning, I'm Clinton Griffiths, the U.S. top trade official in the hot seat on Capitol Hill. U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai answering several questions before the House Ways and Means Committee. Ag Day's Michelle Rook listening to that testimony. Michelle, Tai was questioned on everything from supply chain concerns to trade with China.
Yeah, that's right, Clinton. The committee blasted Ambassador Tai about the growing trade deficit, especially in regards to China, plus the lack of enforcement of current trade agreements and the void of new trade deals. And farmers in the country echo those sentiments.
Mr. Chairman, welcome back, Ambassador Tai.
Committee Chair Jason Smith says the Biden administration has a failed trade agenda that has avoided formal trade agreements that could reduce tariffs and aren't enforcing existing trade deals such as USMCA. In the meantime, he says the U.S. is losing ground to China globally.
You have failed to enforce the Phase One agreement, despite knowing that China is violating its end of the agreement. This administration has pursued no new cases at the WTO, no new Section 301 investigations.
USTR Katherine Tai detailed the administration's strategic review of trade policies towards China, noting how their actions have created real risk for our supply chains.
This administration will continue to stand up to the PRC, and we are prepared to use our trade tools in this effort, including through new Section 301 action and our four-year review of the China Section 301 tariffs.
Tai emphasized strong U.S. ag exports of $175 billion in 2023 and touted efforts at new market access.
We are also opening markets for hardworking American families and communities, especially our rural communities. Through negotiations, our administration has secured over $21 billion in new agricultural market access in the last 3 years.
However, Chairman Smith refuted those figures and pointed to the growing trade deficit.
You can understand my concern when the U.S. agriculture trade deficit reached a staggering $21 billion. $21 billion in 2023. This is even more alarming when you compare it to the years when President Trump was in office, where the average trade surplus was over $5.2 billion.
USDA estimates the trade deficit this year will grow to nearly $31 billion. And that's troubling to the American Farm Bureau with the surplus of grain in the U.S.
In times of high supply like that, you have to get out and find new markets and expand our trading partners overseas. And the way it looks to us, our government is not doing that right now. And we've asked the administration what's the next steps with China or finding other countries to go to, and we don't get much of an answer, and it's very frustrating.
The Biden administration continues to blame the trade deficit on the strong U.S. dollar, horticulture imports, and a robust U.S. economy. I'm Michelle Rook reporting for Ag Day.
All right, thanks, Michelle. Taking a closer look at China's economy, Beijing says it picked up speed at the start of 2024. First quarter gross domestic product grew 5.3% from a year earlier. As Mark Stewart reports, it's outpacing analysts' expectations.
Let's start with some context. It was just about 1 month ago when government leaders here in Beijing unveiled an economic growth target of about 5% for 2024. Some see that as ambitious. This latest report, though, on the health of the Chinese economy is very much in line with that target, but there are some questions about whether it can be maintained, sustained into the future. If we look at the data, manufacturing is a big part of the success. And in China, there are really three big industries right now: electric vehicles, solar panels, and batteries. And being based here, a lot of this is something that I have seen firsthand. Yet, as we've heard from economist Harry Murphy Cruz from Moody Analytics, quote, there's a growing mismatch in China's economy. Manufacturers are doing the heavy lifting while households sit on the sidelines. And there's concern China is flooding the market, essentially adding so much merchandise, negatively then impacting pricing, making it difficult for others to compete. It's an issue Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen talked about during her visit here just last week, a practice that can prevent a level playing field. In addition, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz met with Chinese leader Xi Jinping, and before that, the German Chancellor expressed concerns among similar lines, according to Reuters. Finally, the bigger issue, China is still fighting economic headwinds, including problems with the property sector, an issue that still lingers and could prevent future growth.
All right, thanks, Mark. And here's a quick look at how ag exports are going to China right now for the major grains. This covers from October to February. Now, so far, China is the number one buyer of soybeans with more than 20 million metric tons, but that's down more than 7 million from the same period last year. It's number five when it comes to U.S. corn, importing just over 1 million metric tons, but down more than 2 million from 2023. For wheat, it's the fourth biggest buyer at over 774,000 metric tons, up slightly from a year ago. And so far, it's our top cotton buyer with more than 433,000 metric tons. The chances for rain and severe weather are continuing to push east. Meteorologist Matt Engelbrecht joins us with an update.
Yeah, in fact, yesterday when we looked at the severe weather potential, this was back here. So you can see how that system, that low pressure system, is working from the west to the east. And we're highlighting the potential for some severe storms. That does include a few tornadoes, damaging winds, heavy rain, and large hail into Indiana, Ohio, and southeast Michigan into Detroit. The green area is how far some of the thunderstorms will extend out from the parent low pressure system. This also matches up with the daytime heating. The warmest part of the day is when we have the most energy in the atmosphere to use for some of these storms. Now, this isn't just going to stop on Thursday or Friday. It's going to continue to move to the east. A bit of a weaker state, but we're going to be following another system in behind this that could bring more widespread showers to the Midwest once again. But again, there's a look at the severe storm potential coming up on Wednesday. And a great day to get planting in Nebraska. That's if you can put up with the wind. Kale Carlson of Marquette sharing this video as he digs in and the dust kicks up. At least you have sunny skies there. I'll have more in your forecast coming up.
If you were guessing which animal is more dangerous, wild hogs or sharks, which would you guess? Well, new research is answering that question. And according to a startling new study from researcher John Mayer, wild pigs kill more people each year than sharks do by a wide margin. Take a look at this. From 2014 to 2023, the average yearly number of fatal shark attacks worldwide was just under six, while the average number of fatal wild pig attacks was more than three times higher at nearly 20 per year, including seven deaths by wild pigs already in 2024. Farm Journal's Chris Bennett digging into the strange but true statistics.
Wild pigs are killing people at a rate, you know, two, three, four times that of sharks, not just great whites, but all species put together, according to John J. Mayer's research. And certainly, I don't want to discount in any way, you know, the deaths by tigers, crocodiles, venomous snakes. Those all surpassed wild pigs. But when you compare wild pigs to sharks, to wolves, to bears, for example, as Mayer did, wild pigs rank above all of those.
And it's not just deaths. Wild pig attacks are even more common, with 1,532 verified attacks from 2000 to 2019. That resulted in 172 human deaths in 29 countries, and nearly 40% were farm workers or people engaged in agricultural activities.
There's not a fleet of wild pig attacks on humans occurring, but Mayer's research is very noteworthy because it shows a clear trend where these attacks are going up. Maybe that's because they're being documented and noted now. That remains to be seen.
While a naturally defensive animal, wild pigs can be aggressive when cornered. Once set on confrontation, these animals are extremely dangerous.
And you're talking about an animal that can move, you know, 25, 30 miles per hour in short bursts. It's a wad of muscle, massive amount of muscle on the neck and shoulders. You've got tusks. It's particularly long enough on the males on the bottom that are razor sharp on the sides.
The average wild pig now weighing 240 pounds, and 86% of those attacks happened in the daylight. But where you live makes a difference. According to Mayer, more than half of all fatal pig attacks occurred in India, followed by China at 8%. Now in the U.S., there are 6 recorded fatalities in the past 100 years. You should check out Chris's full story on this online. You can head over to agweb.com and click on Hogzilla or Jaws for more. It was another tough day for grains while cattle continued on solid footing. We'll talk markets coming up next. And later, wheat growers in Michigan and surrounding areas have a new destination. We'll tour a brand new flour mill in the country.
Ag Day is brought to you by Germinator Closing Wheels. Germinator Steel Closing Wheels provides a 13-bushel advantage per acre in no-till and a 7-bushel advantage per acre in conventional. Do you have enough room in your bin to switch to the Germinator?
Soybeans fell to the lowest one-day level in over a month, while cattle continue to climb. Michelle Rook is back with more in Markets Now.
Corn and soybean futures ending lower again on Tuesday. Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net is back with us. And Matt, how much of the press that we saw in the row crop sector was weather and fast planting?
Yeah, I think there's some of it. I mean, clearly it's a very start, running a little bit ahead, maybe. Bottom line is that Western Corn Belt has been drier, as we all know. It's been well documented, which gives them a little bit of a jump start on planting. But, you know, parts of Iowa have gotten 1 to 2 inches of rain here in the last day or so. So I think that it may slow that down just a little bit, you know, dollars stronger. There's just a lack of buying that continues to show up. At the same time, I think whenever you try to push down to levels we haven't seen for several days, especially on corn, the sellers kind of dry up as well. So it's just been kind of a really, really boring sideways market here lately.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funds, you know, when you say we're range bound here, it seems like the funds push this thing up. Then we get farmers selling. We trail back down because we can't take out resistance. How long is that going to continue?
That's a really good question. But I would tell you, you know, if the funds decide that they do want to cover shorts, which is something I've got to think that they're going to do, at least to an extent, you don't typically take a huge short fund position into the heart of a growing season. You know, it's not like it's a bullish situation, but you do have less acres that you're working with, of course, you know, and then obviously the balance sheet tightened up just a little bit. I just cannot imagine that the funds want to take the risk into the heart of the growing season. But if they do buy it, there's no question that you still got, 5 billion bushels of corn on the farm that needs to move down here sooner or later.
And the cattle market up for a second day here. Do you think we're starting to put some of these HPAI fears behind us, Matt, or not?
Yeah, I mean, that was just something I think to trade on, and the market had had a resurgence after that huge sell-off towards the end of the calendar year. And, you know, I think a lot of these folks, egg cattle are too cheap. They ran them up. You got into the high 180s, and then I think some of the, you know, funds said, hey, maybe we've made enough money for the time being, dumped a few of those longs. And it looks like right now you've stabilized.
Well, it definitely would be nice to see. Thanks for joining us. I'm Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net. We'll have more Ag Day coming up.
Now, just a little bit ago, we looked at the severe weather potential, and what I mentioned was the timing. Now, we had the greatest potential for severe weather into southeast Michigan, Ohio, and now parts of northeast Indiana when the warmer temperatures come through, the warmest part of the day, daytime heating. So this is Wednesday at 3 p.m. You see the showers. Doesn't look like much, but embedded in there, extending back down here to the south, you may get some isolated thunderstorms or isolated strong thunderstorms, possibly severe, in those locations. This entire system is going to be moving off to the east, bringing rain to the east coast. kind of raining itself out. We're not picking up a lot of Gulf moisture with this system. But as I mentioned earlier, this is Thursday at 6 a.m. A weak kind of clipper system in the jet stream is going to come through, and that could kick up some more isolated showers, maybe a rumble of thunder back into the Midwest as well. So this is Thursday at 11 p.m. Line of showers, perhaps some thunderstorms moving through. At this time, the severe weather threat, that's not zero, but it is low. I think as we look at this, once this first system gets out of here, as we look at this a little bit more closely, may start to highlight the severe weather potential if this line really does come together. But again, that's Thursday at 11 p.m. after sunset. By Friday at 8 a.m., we're going to be onto a much cooler atmosphere in and across the United States with that low pressure system moving out and cooler air moving in. Speaking of which, here's a look at the jet stream on Friday. So what you'll see is that first system moving through and then another clipper system coming down from the north to the south. This is Saturday and into Sunday. This is our signal for things to change back to a ridge of high pressure across the United States and a warming trend Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Next week, we'll be eyeing this right here. Another bit of energy trying to drop from the north to the south. Pretty shallow, so not expecting a drastic change, but we could be talking more cooler temperatures and thunderstorms in those locations. We'll start off in Waco, Texas. Cloudy, high around 83 degrees, low of 71. Got some evening showers in Alabama, high of 77, low of 63. In Portland, Maine, mostly sunny, high about 54 with a low of 38 degrees.
Truckers are on high alert after more than $12,000 worth of pork was stolen from a tractor trailer. Now, police say the trailer was parked overnight in Northeast Philadelphia. They say the trucker was sleeping in his cab when he felt a shake as the thieves rifled through the trailer. Now, it's reported they made off with 56 cases of pork. According to Truckers News, food and beverage trucks are popular targets right now for cargo thieves, especially with higher food prices. Truckers News says last year, more than $130 million worth of cargo was stolen from trucks in the U.S. That's a 57% increase over the previous year. U.S. pork exports to Central America saw some success last year, and the U.S. Meat Export Federation says that has continued into this year. The group says consumer education programs, thanks to funding from USDA and the National Pork Board, are helping to drive the growth. USMEF holding workshops in Central America where people can learn the nutritional facts about pork along with how to manage it and cook it. It started with a program called Girls Can Grill, where 300 women learned all about how to cook pork, and now the program is expanding.
Now we are coming in 2024 with another program that is called Inspire Us. It's like the second edition of Girls Can Grill, but in another methods of cooking U.S. pork cuts. And we focus on loin because loin is a very versatile muscle, let's say.
In 2023, pork exports to Central America climbed 20% year over year. Through February of 2024, exports to the region jumped 17%. From a year ago. Wheat growers in Michigan have a new destination. We'll get a look at a new flour mill in the Great Lakes State next in the country. There's a new expanded flour mill in Michigan, and it's estimated it can produce 800,000 pounds of flour a day. The Michigan Farm Bureau shows us the $47 million investment King Milling Company has made in the western part of the state.
It's exciting, it's exhilarating. You know, I've been here 50 some years, so to have this milestone take place, it's pretty neat. And on a beautiful day like this, after an eclipse, I mean, it's phenomenal. We've been running full out for a number of years, and we've had to buy flour from other mills. And we made the commitment that we're going to expand so we've got flour to sell to people.
This is the newest, most modern flour mill in the country today. And yes, it uses a lot of very high technology, a lot of efficiency, energy efficiency. The building is fully insulated, which is a little unusual for a concrete building. It's fully insulated. We've got all LED lighting throughout the building, and premium efficiency motors that are used. And then there's a special heat recovery system that works with the pneumatics in the building that reduces the amount of fossil fuel that the company is using, especially during colder weather. So it's got a number of very efficient technologies being used. And we are selling more flour. We are seeing demand. And so it's just been a great project.
We've had very good community support. We live here. It's our community. And I think being grounded in it has helped our generations stay here.
And our thanks to the Michigan Farm Bureau for sharing that story with us. And that's all the time we have this morning. We're sure glad you tuned in. From all of us here at Ag Day, I'm Quentin Davis. Have a great day.